Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, June 6th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the internet and the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. Once you do that, you'll get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We help people do that soon and often because our experience has been that the actual use of those tools has improved the quality of our life and relationships, and we are somewhat confident it will do the same for you or anybody else who chooses to use them. The other reason we encourage people to do that on a regular basis is that it tends to lead to comments, questions, answers, testimonials, and if you have any of those that you would like to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And if you have comments or questions and you're listening to this in the archives and you would like to have those addressed on the show, you can email us at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or Jeannie at jeanie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. If we get any of those comments or questions or answers or testimonials and we address them on the internet show, and then we will, as time allows, send you a notation, an email, letting you know what day and time it was addressed so you can access it through the archives. And that's, you know, another tool that's made available. The archives of these shows for the past 11-plus years are available at whyagain.org, and some select ones are available at mindshiftersacademy.org. as are the highlight shows and the regular shows of this internet show since December 10th, where we've been working through the, or January 10th, since we're working through the Way of Mastery and going slowly and doing commentary with it. Also available are the actual nearly verbatim recordings of the first 12 lessons. And as we're moving forward through this, I will make an effort to get the next 12 lessons and their audio files uploaded. So you can actually listen to a straightforward reading of the lesson, and or you can listen to the shows we've done with the Way of Mastery lessons with commentary. And there's also a page on that website for the highlights of the Way of Mastery with commentary. So we have plenty of time for comments and questions, and as I like to remind people, I am actively interested in your comments and questions, even if I'm doing a little monologue or reading from the Way of Mastery. So please feel free to call in at 563-999-3581 and press 1. And I will turn on your microphone, either instantly or as soon as it seems to fit in the flow of the program and whatever I'm involved in. So, what's on your mind? How have you been? How was your weekend? What are you struggling with? What are you liking so far about the first 12 lessons of the Way of Mastery? I've had a number of sessions with people over the past the week, a little bit more than a week now, where one of the highlight issues that we're dealing with is people's difficulty accepting compliments, thinking of themselves in less than complimentary terms, and how distorting that can be, because if you cannot see yourself accurately, if you can't let in valid compliments and or assessments of your personality and work and efforts, then the negative thoughts you have about yourself are compounded in their effects of distorting your perception. And it's one of the things that this work is highlighting for us in the Way of Mastery, is that we actively create our perception moment to moment. And in that process, we create our experience of life moment to moment. And if I'm doing my best to be a good person or help others or compliment people and be kind and thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent, whatever those Boy Scout oath qualities were, if I'm doing my best at that, and our motto here is that everyone's doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have, and if I'm doing my best at that, and somebody notices and wants to thank me for that or compliment me for what I've accomplished, and I don't want to hear it, I want to push it away, or I want to think from the negative assessments of myself, then those negative assessments and the traumas usually associated with them drive my perception moment to moment. And they do so far more than the accurate assessment of my life and my interactions with others. And that's what, you know, Michael Rice talks about. There's this spiritual quality of true perception, which is the ability to see the world as it actually is. And then there's you know, our perception, which is the Course in Miracles says perception was made as an attack on God, meaning perception, the way our minds generated from the conscious logical mind and our negative thoughts, is a distortion that prevents us from seeing accurately, seeing the truth of what is. So every time I push away a compliment, every time I either breeze by it or fight against it, chances are I'm contributing to a filter in my perceptual mechanism which is going to distort life, distort my perception of life in an unproductive way. And the goal is true perception. The goal is to be able to see the truth of life accurately. And sometimes we have to take a breath and we have to soften and we have to look inside of ourselves and discover, okay, what's tight or tense within me in this moment where somebody wants to give me a compliment and I'm pushing it away? Because if I'm not willing to do that, if I'm not willing to look at the part of me that's tight or tense or pushes away a compliment, then I can't see it for what it is, and if I can't see it for what it is, I can't dismantle it. So if you're one of those people who has difficulty accepting a compliment, please understand this means you're going to have difficulty perceiving life accurately. And that's just a blanket statement that goes across the board. I think it's 100% accurate. Every time I've observed, that's what I've seen. And I would encourage you to observe the same thing for yourself. Who do you know that when you experience them and you're moved to give them a compliment, not because you're trying to get something from them, not because you're trying to kiss up to them and get their favor, but just because you're genuinely observing in the moment something that you appreciate about them, who do you know who pushes that away? And if you take a step back and look at that in the other person and see, wow, you'll probably be able to see how that is a signpost of how this person is distorting perception. And if it's that way in them, it's that way in me. We are all the same. This is just how life is. So at this point, I've been looking at, we've done the first 12 lessons twice each lesson, and except for lesson 11, which is the meditation lesson. We only read it once, but it's available to be listened to again and again at mindshiftersacademy.org. And so today I was going to start moving into lesson 13. Reminding myself as I go that I probably will be dipping back into the first 12 lessons over and over again to see what little pearls of grace, what little inklings of wisdom and further understanding I can glean from them. And of course, as I talk about this work and these three books in one, I keep referring to it as a fractal or a hologram. It's self-referential. Every part of it is connected to every other part. So as we move forward in lesson 13, it's not like we're starting off in a completely new direction with a completely new topic. And I'm sure it'll be clear in just the first couple pages here. Lesson 13, in the way of transformation, Lesson 13 is titled, You Are Unlimited Spirit. The text reads, Now we begin. Indeed, as always, greetings unto you, beloved and holy friends. We come forth to join with you, and yet we are not apart from where you are. We are not inaccessible to any of the Creator's offspring. In truth, separation does not exist in all of creation. This can only mean that I am not apart from where you are. And where you are has nothing at all to do with the location of the body that you have learned to call your own. In truth, you are pure spirit. In truth, you are as I am. In truth, that which you are abides throughout all dimensions of consciousness. In truth, that which you are has never tasted separation from your Creator. There is an aspect of you that has chosen to perceive yourself as identified with the physical body in your third dimensional world called time and space. This is a part of the experience you have created and thus called to your higher self. But when I speak of self with a capital S, higher self, I speak not of the self which is the dream of the body, not of the little s self which you have identified yourself with. Rather, I speak of the capital S self that transcends all limitation and exists in all dimensions. Beloved friends, by way of introduction to what we will be speaking unto in the next 12 lessons called The Way of Transformation, please rest with this simple truth. At no time are you imprisoned within the body. At no time are you limited to the appearance that you have come to believe is you. No matter how deep the pain, no matter how certain you have been of what you call your common sense telling you, quote, I am here, I am this body, this moment is happening, this is all there is, close quotes. Regardless of all that, the truth is not shaken. You are not the mere appearance of the body-mind that you have called the, quote, self, close quotes. Now, with that simple point as a foundation, we can begin. Beloved friends, the way of transformation rests on exactly the same thing that all of your dreams rest upon. The decision concerning what you would be committed to. So this next 12 lessons rest on what you decide to commit your energy to, your mind energy to, your thoughts to, the thoughts that you value. You make a decision about what you're going to be committed to, and that's what this work rests on. So if you're a little bit wishy-washy in your commitment, you're going to get little wishy-washy results from the next 12 lessons. If you are wavering about whether or not any of this has any validity in your life, you'll get this little wisp of a waver of some kind of an impact as you read through these next 12 lessons. The way of transformation rests on the decision that you make concerning what you would be committed to. The text goes on and says, for you cannot dream a dream, that is, you cannot create an experience in the field of consciousness . So here it's being very clear about the fact that your experience in the field of consciousness is a dream you are creating. It is a perception that exists nowhere but in your perceptual field. And it's saying you cannot create an experience of life without being 100% committed to it. It may appear that this is the case, but I assure you that it is. It may appear this is not the case, but I assure you it is the case, that everything you experience is created by your choice of what you will be committed to, by your choice of which thoughts you will value, by your choice of which traumas you will cling to, which will create the filters that distort your perception, that create your experience of life. The text goes on and says, this means that in each moment of your lived experience, what you are aware of is wholly, totally, completely uncaused by anything outside of yourself. This is right back to page 5 in the first lesson. As you read these words, for example, as you hear these words through the radio, if you limit yourself to being only the body receiving certain frequencies of vibration, touching the eyes and the ears and creating a certain neurological stimulus within the brain, translating that vibration into certain words of your English language, that experience is not caused by anything outside of you. Now, each and every one of us has had life experiences that we could draw upon to validate this for ourselves, just from our memory. We don't have to go out and try and replicate the experiment. Every one of us has been in a room full of people where something's happened, and some people have gotten upset, and some people have started laughing, and some people didn't even notice what happened. Whether it was at a business setting, or at a social gathering, or a family gathering, or a party, every one of us has been right there in the room when somebody said or did something and somebody else chose to be offended by it and somebody else chose to find it humorous and somebody else didn't even hear what was being said, even though they were right next to the person saying it, because their attention was on some other aspect of life in that moment. Everything we experience, each moment of your lived experience, what you are aware of in every new moment is totally and completely caused inside of yourself. Nothing outside of you creates your experience of life. As you hear these words, if you limit your being to only the body, if you only focus on receiving the frequencies of vibration, touching your ears, creating a certain neurological stimulus within the brain, and translating that vibration into certain words of your English language, and connecting those words of your English language to the meaning and the emotionality of your past experiences with those words, that experience is only caused inside yourself. No one else is having the exact life experience that you are in each moment. How many times have you been in a movie or you've been in a house where there was a television screen going and they were playing some Hallmark movie or some Christmas movie and two or three people in the room are tearing up and you aren't having any emotional impact at all? Or vice versa, you're tearing up and you look around and people are going, oh, take this stuff off. I hate these, you know, chick flicks or whatever they call them. How many times... And endless number of times. If you're 30 or 40 or 50 years old, you've had an endless number of situations that you can draw on from your memory where this principle is on display for you to directly observe. Each and every one of us creates our experience of life moment to moment, and there is no other cause than how we choose to interpret and respond to those events and the thoughts that we value and the energies that we've downloaded and held on to value. Maybe you call them trauma energies. Maybe you call them beliefs. Maybe you call them dogmas. Maybe you call them, you know, my truths. That's what gets resonated when sights and sounds and physical sensations impact the body, and we are paying attention to those specific sights and sounds and physical sensations. Everything that we've ever associated with those sights and sounds and physical sensations, those words, those meanings, those emotions, actively comes into our awareness, and that's what forms our perception. The text goes on to say, we are equally and infinitely free in this very moment as we contemplate these words to experience this transmission of vibration in a completely different way, beyond our language. We are free to perceive from the realms of pure spirit. We are free to see Yeshua and those who join with Yeshua as we transmit that frequency that causes the vibration that resonates within our physical form and our conscious logical mind, what Michael Rice would call the carbon-based memory, the brain. So here's an exercise to expand our awareness. Here's a simple exercise. The text reads, take just a moment and within your consciousness, drop this simple pebble. Remember from lesson 8, every thought that we choose is like dropping a pebble into a still clear pool. It sends up an energy frequency within our mind and it sends out energy that's the flavor of the thought that we have chosen to value. So they're recommending that we choose this thought, quote, I am not what I have perceived myself to be. I am unlimited, pure spirit, and nothing is unavailable to me. Everything is available to me. Therefore, in this moment, I choose to open access to other dimensions of experience so that I might call this moment to me in a different way. Close quotes. Now, this is just a thought to start playing with, to see if you like how it feels and to notice what happens if you choose to value it. So I'm going to read it again. Just listen to what gets vibrated within you. I am not what I have perceived myself to be. I am unlimited pure spirit, and everything is available to me. Therefore, in this moment, I choose to open access to other dimensions of experience so that I might call this moment to me in a different way. Just breathe into that.
9%
of the time. 847, you're in the air.
But yeah, I have had some issues today with my computer just going round and round, so it's very possible. I'm sure it's RN.
So area code 847, if you did want to have your hand up, press 1 twice because it will take the hand down and then put it back up. So just notice how this resonates for you. I am not what I have perceived myself to be. I'm going to question, what am I? Is it possible that I am pure spirit? I'm unlimited. I'm part of the Christ mind. I'm part of the one mind. Is it possible everything they've been talking about in the first 12 lessons? that I am the extension of the creative energy and form? If so, therefore, in this moment, I choose to open my own ability to access other dimensions of experience so that I might call this moment to myself in a different way, perhaps a more loving way, perhaps a more connected way, a more expansive way, a more ethereal way, a more gratitude-based way, regardless of my current physical situation. The text goes on and says, as the words are spoken, notice what images begin to come into your field of awareness. As you perhaps imagine yourself to be far more than just the body, abiding in a far greater dimension than the physical dimension. The text asks, do you see fleeting images of other beings, colors of light, subtle feelings that perhaps you'd not been aware of while you were focusing on the English translation of the vibrations? What do you notice drifting through the field of your awareness? Pay attention to it, for you cannot imagine what you have not or are not experiencing. So if you imagine it, it's because you are experiencing it now or you have in the past. I have, on a regular basis when I'm working with people, I have the experience. I had it one in a session earlier this morning where there was a mother of an almost 10-year-old, and she was talking about how as she was dealing with her daughter, she just kept getting this feeling that there was something her daughter knew, but kept telling the mom, I don't know why I feel this way. I don't know what I'm afraid of. I don't know what's going on for me. And the mother, who's been working with this kind of work and really doing exercises to trust her judgment more and tap into all these different levels of mental and emotional and physical energy and stimulation and sensitivity, the mother just had this niggling thought in the back of her mind. I wonder if my daughter actually does know one of these things that she feels sad about. And she gently asked several times over the course of, maybe half an hour. And eventually the daughter, in a quiet time when they were hugging and relaxing and just agreeing to be sad, the daughter said, okay, here it is. And she revealed the specific thing that she had this thought about loss. That's what we're talking about doing more and more with everybody in our lives, not just our sons and daughters. And we're talking about dropping this pebble into our awareness. I'm not just the body. I'm not everything I've been told to think about myself. I'm far more than that. I am unlimited, pure spirit, and everything is available to me. Therefore, in this moment, I choose to open access to other dimensions of experience so that I might call this moment to me in an entirely different way. What would it be like if, like in Lesson 3 and in Lesson 4, it says, I choose to see everyone and everything around me as a brother or sister who's a being of brilliance and light just as I am, and they're either extending from their conscious awareness of that light, they're extending it in a loving gesture, or everything about what I'm seeing coming out of them and in their actions can be seen by me most accurately as a cry for help and healing. As you speak these words, as you open yourself to this experience, notice what images might come to into your mind or in the fringes of your field of awareness. It's going to be subtle. It's going to be something you're used to tossing off as a playful fantasy. It's going to be part of what you have experienced in the past and been taught to ignore. Maybe you see fleeting images of other beings. Maybe you see colors of light. Maybe you have subtle feelings that perhaps you'd not been aware of while you were focusing on an English language translation of what someone was saying or doing. What do you notice drifting through the field of your awareness? Backing up, watching yourself, being in the position of the observer, the witness, the seat of the soul, practicing stepping back from your thoughts to observe them. The text goes on and says, you are the field of consciousness having that experience now. You create the capacity. You decide what will enter into the field of your awareness and how you will experience it. Beloved friends, learn to look beneath the scenes. Learn to feel beyond the body. Learn to allow yourself awareness of what steals across the metaphorical corner of your eye. That is, the outer edges of the field of your awareness. Come to realize that the experience you are most familiar with, that is, of being a body, of being the body-mind, somebody who listens to these words, which are simply vibrations of sound, and then you translate them into English, and therefore you perceive that you're having a conversation with one who happens to be in another body, that entire process of perception is very limited. Recognize that around the edges of that, there is something far more vast, something which can be cultivated that allows you to be aware of it at much more refined levels. You can cultivate this. Here's that word again. You can practice this. You can nurture this. You can support the growth of this awareness within yourself. The text goes on and says, eventually, you will be able to perceive these dimensions of energy with your eyes open as you look upon another body mind, who is currently having the experience of vibrating thoughts through it directed toward you. Now, you call it a conversation. You will see that the other being is not just a body, but you'll see them as a field of light. Eventually, you will see colors. You will feel vibrations. And those colors and those vibrations will tell you much more than the words could ever say to you. The result, of course, is that you will not be fooled by words nearly as often as you have been in the past. That's critical. And it makes me think instantly of one of my favorite lines from Guy Finley, where he says, if you don't want something from another person, they can't lie to you. If you don't want something from another person, they can't lie to you. And that's what comes to my mind here. If I'm seeing myself and the other person accurately, if I see them as nothing but an extension of the field of light that I am an extension of, then I realize I'm not lacking anything. There's nothing of value they can give me. There's nothing of value that they can take from me. There's nothing of value that I can give them. There's nothing of value I can take from them. My perception will be clear, crystal clear, and perfect, and they will not be able to deceive me with words because I won't be fooled by these more coarse physical vibrations. when I'm feeling and seeing and sensing their true nature and my true nature in the moment. The text goes on and says, practice this little exercise as often as you choose in any and all circumstances. It's simple. It's easy. It is not difficult. You simply use the field of your consciousness to decide to be aware of what is around the edges of the third dimensional experience you're having. Here's a way to do it. For instance, when you're in your automobile and you pull up to a red light, as you sit next to another automobile with a driver, look over through the physical eyes. If you limit yourself, you will see an automobile with another body sitting behind a wheel, similar to what your body or what you call your body is doing. What if you allowed yourself to play with it? How do you play with it? How about you look at that being, that energy field, and say within your mind, this is but one small expression of that being. I wonder what's occurring around the edges. You might surprise yourself when suddenly a thought comes into your consciousness. And you know that thought is not yours. It could be the thought of the other person in the car saying, oh my God, why didn't I iron my husband's shirt this morning? Oh, he's going to be so angry. The text asks us, how many times have thoughts like that entered your mind and you've dismissed them as imagination? What we are suggesting here is to use the most ordinary moments of your day to become aware of your own being, your own naturally expanded, unlimited self. Capital S, self. There is nothing hidden at any time. In any moment, you have full access to the totality of another soul. Now this, if people actually listen to this, this is going to challenge what a lot of people believe. A lot of people believe that they're private and their privacy and you have no right to go into somebody else's energy field or thoughts or... But this work says all minds are joined and there is no such thing as privacy at this deeper level. And please question this for yourself. Expand your experience by extending your practice to see what happens. What we're suggesting here is to use the most ordinary moments of your day to become aware of your own being and your own naturally expanded, unlimited self. There is nothing hidden from you at any time. There may be things you choose not to look at, but there is nothing hidden at any time. In any moment, you have full access to the totality of another soul. And this work knows that that's going to rankle some people. And so the very next thing the text says is, does that sound like an invasion of privacy? Beloved friends, there is no such thing. Privacy is only important for those who believe that they're cut off and separate and perhaps have something to hide. In reality, nothing is hidden. As you come to trust that the deep nature of your own being is perfect wisdom, perfect compassion, and perfect love, you will begin to release the fear that you have built up around the extraordinary skills that you already possess. And for whatever reason, that just reminds me very strongly of part of the conversation between Wayne Dyer and Abraham Hicks. And with a lot of the back and forth about, in that conversation, a lot of the back and forth was about death, the death of his father, the loss of his mother, the fact that Esther Hicks' husband Jerry died, made the transition, dropped the body, and Wayne Dyer was asking questions about that, and then started asking questions about, well, you know, are these evil people, are these bad people, are they going to be punished when they die? And Abraham says, you humans, we love you dearly, we love you so much, you really don't like to hear that there's not going to be any punishment in the next life or in that experience of your existence after you drop the physical body, because there is so much training, there's so much conditioning, there's so much belief in the body, and there's so much anthropomorphizing of the Creator to have human petty emotions. And as I say that, I flash on the book The Shack, where there was this it was a very difficult book for me to read, because they talk, you know, the opening scenes of the book are about a young girl who is kidnapped and then murdered horribly. And you say, why would you ever read a book like that? Well, because I had made a commitment to moderate a book club, and they chose that title. Otherwise, I never would have read a book like that, because I don't need that kind of thing in my life. The point is, eventually the father is having a spiritual experience. The father of the little girl that got murdered, abducted and murdered, and he's having a spiritual experience, and he ends up having a confrontation with his image of God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit and all of this stuff. And, you know, at one point, the grieving father is talking about how he wants vengeance, and he's hoping that this person will be, you know, severely punished for all eternity, etc. And in his thinking about that, he has a conversation with the Creator, and the Creator says, okay, so which of your children would you want to banish to hell forever? And the father says, well, none. I like them all. I love them all equally. Well, but wait, what if they did something horrible? And the father says, well, I wouldn't ever want that for any of my children. I would have to have compassion and forgiveness. And so he visualizes the Creator, God, having that conversation and saying, okay, well, just the way you feel about your children, I feel about all of mine, including this man who did this horrible thing to the physical body of your daughter. And Abraham was saying much the same thing to Wayne Dyer, that, you know, that human beings don't like to hear that no matter what somebody does in the physical realm, they are not despised by the Creator, that in an ultimate sense, they're not going to be punished and thrown into a hellfire pit for all eternity. I remember a few years ago, we were in this show, on the internet show and in discussions, and it just dawned on me how ludicrous it is for us to think that we are so civilized and we are so sophisticated, and yet we have religions that preach that if you do these things that we call sins, you're going to be condemned to burn in a fiery pit for all eternity. And yet, we think we're so intelligent and civilized and sophisticated, and we look down our noses at other civilizations that we've heard of that lived on an island where there was a volcano, and they used to sacrifice their virgins or, you know, their religious devoted people to the volcano by throwing them into the fiery pit to appease the god, to make amends for any perceived offense, and thinking that the god would be appeased if certain individuals were cast into the fiery pit. And we think it's completely different to envision hellfire and brimstone awaits anybody who breaks enough rules within a religion in our modern, sophisticated world. And whether we're Baptist or we're Catholic or we're name all of these various religions that believe in hell and they believe in punishment after you drop the body, and this is, it's a conditioned thought process, and what we're being told to begin to observe for ourselves in this work is that you have a connection to a higher self. You have an existence as a conduit for the creative energy in this world, and you are connected to everyone and everything, and you have a connection to your source, which is deep trust, perfect wisdom, perfect compassion, and perfect love. And you will begin to release the fear that you have built up around that ability to tap into exactly what is going on with someone else. There is nothing hidden at any time. In any moment, you have full access to the totality of another soul. There is no such thing as the invasion of privacy, because privacy is only important for those who believe that they're cut off and separate, and perhaps they might have something to hide. You will discover that you can trust your unlimited spirit. At the beginning of this chapter, it said, try dropping this thought into your consciousness. I am not what I have perceived myself to be. I am unlimited. I am pure spirit, and everything is available to me. Therefore, in this moment, I choose to open access to other dimensions of experience so that I might call this moment to myself in a different way. How might I experience this moment differently? With practice it, this little exercise, as often as you choose in any and all circumstances. What if you were able to perceive beyond the five senses? Come to understand that this experience that you're most familiar with, that one of being a body-mind unit, is a very limited perception of your true nature. And recognize that around the edges of that, there's something far more vast, something which can be cultivated, practiced, nurtured, supported in its growth, that will allow you to be aware at much, much, much more refined levels. Eventually, you'll be able to perceive those dimensions of energy with your eyes wide open as you look at another body-mind who's currently having the experience of vibrating through thoughts and emotions and words and actions directed at you. You might call it a conversation or an interaction, but you will see the other not just as a body, but as a field of light You'll see colors. You'll feel vibrations. And those colors and vibrations will tell you much, much more than words could ever say to you. And the result, of course, is that you will not be fooled by words nearly as often as you have been in the past. You will be able to sense, to feel, to know things that you don't have access to when you're focused purely on the five senses, when you're focused purely on thinking the thoughts and beliefs and impressions and this is how it is kind of teaching that's been conditioned into you for decades. When you're functioning just from that, that's the experience you create. So that's all we're going to read from Lesson 12, the first couple pages today, maybe three pages we read. And we will be back again the rest of this week to explore more about what exercises might be offered, what ways we might expand our experience of life and our awareness. And we encourage people to make your notes and or call in or send an email with comments or questions, because if this doesn't stir stuff up, I don't think anything will. But if the thought that there is no separation and you are not in truth what you think is so private and the secrets you're keeping, they don't really exist at that level, if that doesn't spark some conversation, perhaps nothing will. Again, you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. And we encourage you to call in at 563-999-3581 and put your hand up by pressing number 1 or send us an email. And we appreciate it. And we look forward to your questions and comments and or what experiences you're having if you practice this exercise. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff that we call love. We actually are love and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice. And I will turn on your microphone as I say welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you.
You're welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to a new week, and welcome to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Monday, June the 6th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I'll just remind everybody of two things. One, this coming Saturday, starting at 11 o'clock Eastern time, is our monthly Mind Shifters Stillpoint Breathing Workshop. And so all of you who are participating in that should be doing a Mind Shifter prior to Saturday. And then a second thing that is happening the exact same day, starting at 2 o'clock and going till 5, Michael is doing a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, a three-hour workshop. And it's free. It's by Zoom. And I'll have in the notes for today. We'll also have it up on the website before the end of the day, and I'll be sending out a newsletter giving everybody all the information for both of those events that's coming up on Saturday. So we're getting tools out there. We're having to do it a little differently. We're, you know, by Zoom. And but it's all working out really well. So we hope that you can participate with that. The group that he is doing the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop for is, it's a Facebook marriage support group. And so Michael comments on it ever so often and offers information. So now he's going to be able to do a 3-hour workshop with them. So we invite you all to participate in that. It's free. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here. And then we get to participate in this conversation once again about this awesome tool called First Century Aramaic Forgiveness. Delighted that you're here and delighted that you're part of the show. As Jeannie said, Saturday afternoon, make space on your calendar from 2 to 5 o'clock. We're going to do Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Again. And it'll be live on Zoom. We'll be sending out, for those who are on our mailing list, we'll be sending out an email with a link directly to the process or the workshop on Saturday. So you can just key right in on Zoom, and we'll be there to bring forward the whole process once again in a live format. It'll be 3 hours, 2 to 5. It'll be a free open workshop. Of course, as always, when we do a free workshop, we invite people who are in a position to support, to, if they choose to donate. But it's wide open, free, and please invite anybody on the globe that you would like to invite to be part of the process. And this process of first century Aramaic forgiveness is just so profoundly powerful. And it really, you know, looking at how easily people could be manipulated, it's a way to take our lives back. You'll notice how many people talk about how somebody did this to them and somebody did that, and they made them angry and they made them sad and they made them afraid and they hurt them, and on and on and on goes the list of blame. And notice how easy it is for someone who lives in that world of denial, lives in that world of blame, for somebody else to take over their lives. I mean, all somebody has to do is violate a goal they hold, and somebody's off like a rocket in their pain, their trauma, their drama, because they've never faced and resolved the pain and the drama within themselves. So anyone can trigger unresolved pain into activity. All they have to do, and you'll notice that, you know, unless you're just, or someone's just a generally miserable person, they're pretty happy with everybody in their world as long as that everybody, so to speak, is doing what it is they want them to do, is fulfilling the goals they hold for them. And as long as one fulfills the goal, the mind serves up approval. And generally speaking, the world calls their approval of another love. It's not love at all. It's simply approval. And notice how quickly that approval can turn to disapproval. All somebody has to do is refuse to fulfill a goal you hold for them. And if you really look closely at that first century Aramaic technology, the brilliance of it is just amazing. I mean, it's the resolution of so much in our world. And so many people who are looking at how everybody else is the problem for what's moving inside of them, never once owning or looking at the fact that what's moving inside of them is moving inside of them. And so our invitation here is to, if you live in a world where you're, you know, you play the game of sadness and fear and anger and rage at others, and you're ready to attack and jump all over someone else simply because they don't fulfill a goal that you hold for them, notice that the reason anyone is ever in pain in any given situation, I mean, short of someone punching you in the nose, cancel the thought, is it just pain inside of them that's been unresolved. And when we load goals in our mind that relate to pain, i.e., you know, gee, you're wonderful, I cherish you, you're awesome, but if you don't do this when I want you to do it, I'm ready to puke all over you. Well, when I begin to realize that what I'm doing, that act of disapproval and that act of projecting rage or sadness or whatever it is that one is feeling, that there's a key way into resolving that within oneself. And the key way is to look at the goal that's driving the whole process of pain perception. And the genius of this first century Aramaic teacher from 2,000 years ago, showing us that forgiveness doesn't look like letting somebody else off the hook because I'm in pain. Forgiveness looks like if I'm in pain, I do an assessment. I look at what it is that's driving the pain that's inside of me, and it always relates to something that I want from myself or someone else. And that when I cancel that goal in the Aramaic language, the first century Aramaic word forgive is actually shebag, and it means to cancel. When I cancel that goal, what happens is the pain that's resonated into activity by holding that goal and having that goal violated, all of a sudden that construct in the mind, that construct of pain, collapses. And when it collapses in on and exposes the root of the pain that's happening inside of me, and I get a chance to process through, to breathe through, to bring love to the presence of my mind's pain. And as I do that, my pain begins its dissolution process. I may enter into that particular forgiveness exercise many, many times to process through all aspects of pain that I hold in any given situation. But the power of resolution that comes from understanding first century Aramaic forgiveness is just monumental. And if you are interested in learning exactly how that process works, then mark your calendar for 2 o'clock on Saturday, the 11th. And I'm sure, Jeannie, do you have the link yet for the Saturday workshop?
Only I just picked up the flyer out of your room and brought it in here so I could read it off to them. But, I mean, I didn't read off the Zoom link because it's too long.
No, of course not. Okay, well, I'll copy it and paste it to you.
Okay.
And send
I needed an email to be able to put it on the computer.
Right. I'll do that while we're talking.
Okay.
So the Zoom link will be there in the notes today. Before the show is complete, I'll send it to Jeannie. And if you're on our email list, if you're not on our email list and you'd like to be, go to our website, whyagain.org. And Jeannie, where will, with the new state of the website, where will people find the sign up button
for this Saturday workshop?
No, for the mailing list.
The mailing
somebody just wants to be on our mailing list, and that will give them in the newsletter for the Saturday workshop.
They just go to whyagain.org and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page, and there is a link that says join our mailing list, and it has a glowing heart like on the app. It's down at the very bottom of the page.
Cool. So if you want to get that sent to you directly and you're not on our mailing list, then jump on the website and do that. And, you know, if you want to engage in doing the forgiveness process, you can do it right there live on the website. You can download the worksheet to your own computer and print it off of your computer on your own printer so that you can do the worksheet long-handed. Or you can go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D as one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And when you type that in, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app and download it free. It's specifically designed to be as private as an app can possibly be made private, a la there's only one permission required, and that's for the app to be able to use the Internet. The app doesn't ask if it can dial your phone or take pictures or send texts or change settings or any other junk that a lot of apps do. One simple permission. And so you can be assured that it's private. And if you do a worksheet, at the end of doing a worksheet, you can print it as a PDF and save it to your phone. And if you do that, of course, it's going to ask for permission to save the result of that printing to your phone. So, but otherwise, no permissions. Totally, completely private. So you can put anything you want in that worksheet. Any issue, and you know that you're the only one whose eyes are ever going to see it. And so make use of it. Put it to work. And we appreciate you passing on the information that it's there and that it can be used and that it's Gene's actually doing another rendition, adding some new features again. So it's going to come to still another level of functionality. We just spent the last few days celebrating Jeannie's Eternal Day, and we actually haven't been doing much in the way of movies or anything like that since COVID started, and you probably know that that's our way of playing. So we did several movies this past week, and I was all in the celebration effort for Jeannie's Eternal Day. So once again, Jeannie, happy Eternal Day. A few days late, but June 2nd was the official day, and we started, on June the 1st, and I guess we kind of completed the celebration yesterday. So it was a bit of an extended celebration, but one of the things that that happened as a result of doing that celebration process is we decided that Michael J., my son, is really into Doctor Strange and the Marvel comic characters and all. And so there's a new Doctor Strange movie out, which was pretty cool. It was fun. And it was suggested that we watch a couple of other movies beforehand that would sort of get us up to speed on what was happening in this new movie. And we got to see one that came out last week called Spider-Man No Way Home. And I was so pleasantly surprised at what happened in this film. Last year it was one of the biggest movies of the year, I guess, which is pretty awesome because it means millions and millions and millions of kids across the world were exposed to some very profound and very powerful teachings right there. And thank you, Disney. It's awesome what Disney did in that film. And over the years, you've heard me many times talk about the world myth and how, who's ever seen a play, watched a movie, read a book, seen a TV show that didn't involve the world myth. And the world myth is there's a good guy and there's a bad guy, and the good guy kills the bad guy and becomes the hero. I mean, that's basically, just about every movie we've ever seen. Every TV show, every book, the fairy tale, everything that the good guy feels justified because of their own disturbance and upset and rage in killing someone else. And this is the first television production I've ever seen now about, movies, entertainment movies made for a mass audience. Certainly there are individual films where, based on a true story. In fact, we were told there's another one out just recently that would be a good one to go and see, although we haven't looked at that yet, called Father Lou. It's supposed to be a true story. But what impressed me in watching this Spider-Man No Way Home is, and we've sort of been talking in the last week or two about multiple personalities. And in this particular film, over the years of this franchise for Spider-Man, three young men have played the Spider-Man character. Well, in this particular film, they bring all three of those actors into the movie. And each one of them has had their traumatic loss and experienced their pain and their rage and felt like they wanted to kill the object of their pain and their rage, including the current, you know, this particular, you know, Spider-Man No Way Home. And so through, you know, the juxtaposition of these three different characters, kind of like multiple personalities, each with their own rage and, you know, extreme, I mean, really, in each case, identifiable rage where a loved one was lost through the fault of another person. And it really brings that all to a head, but it brings it to a head with a whole different message. In fact, it's the same message that 2,000 years ago nullified the world myth and brought forward something new to the world. You remember that 2,000 years ago, this man, Yeshua, goes to the Garden of Gethsemane, and we're told that there he sweat blood. And my offering would be that sweating blood, in terms of the healing process from a physician point of view, sweating blood in that case would look like the healing crisis, the detox of many generations of pain and trauma. So we hear Yeshua in the Garden of Gethsemane going through that as he processes through and detoxes himself. And he comes out of the garden, and, you know, the setup is there for the good guy kills the bad guy and becomes the hero. In fact, Peter, in this case, is the setup. He's the guy who's going to kill the high priest servant that's, you know, he's so enraged at because the high priest servant is coming after and is going to kill his master, his teacher. And it's interesting in that setup, and if you've heard me talk about this before, it's interesting that Yeshua addresses Peter, who's going to, quote-unquote, save him from his fate of being mercilessly slaughtered by the high priest servant. Yeshua talks about Peter as Satan. He addresses him. He actually calls Peter Satan, which is like, if you don't understand the Aramaic context of that whole situation, it doesn't make any sense. You know, Peter's supposed to be like the highest level guy of the disciples. Why would he call him Satan? And if you look closely and read those passages, you hear Yeshua define exactly what he means by Satan when he says to Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan." He says, "For you think in the mind of man rather than the plan of the Creator." What is Satan in Aramaic? In Aramaic, Satan is the resistor, one who misleads. That's the definition of Satan. It's not some dude with a red suit, a tail and a pitchfork. And so Yeshua has come to demonstrate the power that we as human beings have and not fall into a permanent death over the actions of another person. And Peter, you know, before they even head to the Garden of Gethsemane, Peter says, "How many swords should we bring to Yeshua?" And Yeshua, I guess knowing what message he was going to give, what lesson he was going to teach, says, "Oh, just bring one." Peter, standing at the gate of Gethsemane, the high priest servant comes, and Peter, in his rage, is going to kill this man, as though someone who would kill could possibly be a disciple of this man who says we're designed to function as love. And because he's in that kill state, because he's in resistance to what's going on, Yeshua addresses him, particularly Satan. He says, "Get behind me. Get out of the way. You're going to block what this is about. You don't have a mind that's big enough to understand what's happening here, Peter. You're stuck in your own little personal self and your own little personal rage, and you're willing to kill somebody over it. And that's not why I came." So Yeshua watches as Peter, ignores him, and he goes after the high priest servant with his sword. He actually, we're told in the scriptures, he hacks off the high priest servant's ear. Now, does Yeshua say to the high priest servant, there, now you got what you deserve for, get out of here before we give you more? No. He dresses down Peter. He says, Peter, a message that if we could but hear this, and this is the same message, interestingly enough, that was so powerfully portrayed in this movie about Spider-Man being given to kids, a message so powerful. He says, Peter, if you live by the sword, you will die by the sword. That's not who you are, Peter. But if you do this, you will destroy yourself by the attack action that you get the original of, and the high priest servant only gets the carbon copy. And then he turns to the high priest servant, the man who's going to have him mercilessly slaughtered. And instead of completing the slaughter job, he reaches out and heals him. I've had people in the past who said, well, wait a minute, Michael. Did you notice that doing that got him dead? And I say, yes, I noticed that doing that got him dead. Did you notice they couldn't keep him that way? My offering is that's the message he came to deliver. Is that if I don't buy into the energies of death, they can't kill me. If I stay connected to the active presence of love, and here's the archenemy who is in pain and need of healing. He doesn't know it. He doesn't know that his rage is a drug he's using for his pain, and he's just fulfilling the world's insanity of the good guy kills the bad guy and trying to become the hero. But Yeshua maintains his awareness of himself as the active presence of love, and nobody can take that away from us, even by killing the body, which we're told he did. But while doing that action of applying healing to the high priest servant, yes, it got him dead. They couldn't keep him dead. The message he came to deliver. And it was interesting in this Spider-Man movie. Watch it if you haven't. It's really powerful to watch. By the way, the impetus, you know, it's like the smartest man in the room in the movie wasn't a man, it was a woman. It was his mother who reminded him who he was and what he was here for and what humans do. In fact, the line is repeated in the movie, this is what we do. We be love. We function as love, and that's what we do. And so in this personalities of the Spider-Man character, each one of them just grieving so deeply and raging at the object of attention of their pain is supported by the other two personalities. In turn, each one of these is supported in healing and reaching out and bringing healing to the archenemy, to the villain. And one by one, through the activity, through the action of love, and it's like, here it is in the Disney good guy healing the bad guy and delivering the message so beautifully, so powerfully, and so clearly. This is what we do. No, we don't kill. We recognize another's pain, and we stand as active present love and bring healing to the world. Wow. Thank you, Disney, for changing the world myth in kids' entertainment movies. I mean, how many million kids for the first time were introduced to, instead of rah, 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 let's go get a gun, let's go shoot somebody, which, you know, that one's playing out in the world in spades, obviously. Instead of delivering the movie of be the hero by killing, it was be the hero by having the internal fortitude to heal yourself and offering presence and the power of active love. So deeply powerful, so deeply profound. Now, millions of kids across the globe have got the brain cells for something different. I understand, you know, on another note, maybe the reason why, you know, some of the people who are playing the rage game in the world are going after Disney and trying to cut out their tax benefits and blah, 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 interfere with their business model because Disney is delivering a different movie. Of course, they're using an excuse different than that, but they're delivering a different message through their entertainment media than the one that supports the good guy kills the bad guy and therefore is the hero. Very, very clear message. The good guy functions as love, has compassion, offers support and healing to the bad guy. And the bad guy doesn't know what hit him. When that act of present love is there, each one of them in turn, these supervillains, turn around and come out of their stupor, move into a healing space rather than the space. I mean, it's just, it was so cool to watch. In fact, as I think about it, I think I'm going to go back. I mean, we ended up renting it, but I think I'm going to go back and rent it again just to watch the nuances of how beautifully they presented this message. And how many kids, you know, I guess kids are starting to watch this Marvel comic stuff at 4 and 5 and 6 and 10 and 12 and 20. I have hope. There's a new message in mass media that's coming forward into the world. Put that on top of a movie that came out a couple of years ago, if you haven't seen it, Inside Out. I think that Inside Out may well be one of the most powerful, and I said this when the movie came out and recommended everybody see it. If you haven't seen the movie Inside Out, it's another Disney thing. And it may well be the most important event in history. And the reason for that, the reason I say that, is that in a mass media model that's going to be spread across the world in so many languages and be available for so many future generations, it demonstrates exactly how the human mind works, exactly how people get lost in trauma and pain, and demonstrates the healing process so powerfully. It demonstrates the power of being in pain and being able to, instead of have to cover it up and pretend everything is cool, being able to share that pain with another, being able to tell the truth, being vulnerable to the presence of love, and inviting the presence of love from others in our world. In this particular case, it's a cartoon character who's in great pain, inviting the presence of love with her parents instead of covering up with all the lies, doing the things that she thinks her parents want her to do, telling the truth about her pain and bringing a space of healing. I mean, it's a very profound message, and why I think it perhaps is maybe one of the most important events in history, and now it's joined by Spider-Man. Is in galling knows how many languages all across the world. Kids as young as 4 with that movie are going to start to build the brain cells for. There's a different way of doing it than the way this insane world has taught us. So if you feel inclined to be exposed to something profound and powerful, watch Inside Out, it's a Pixar movie, or Marvel comic movie, Spider-Man No Way Home. Time for healing, time for the message of actual healing to get out into the world, and for people to process. And remember, in this work, we define processing as the ability to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. And so we see each of these characters in this film with profound and what the world would call fully justified pain and rage toward the object of that situation that has brought that rage up, turning around into healing. So amazing. certainly an idea whose time has come. And we're delighted that the time has come for you to be with us today. And we're at about the 30-minute mark, so we've got 30 minutes for conversation. Let's see if that stimulates any conversation, anything that anybody might want to share. And or is there something we can support you with any of the tools? Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening directly to the show on your phone. And then if you push 1, that raises a hand in the control panel. Thank you, Blog Talk, for this technology that we can do this. And that when you push 1, Jeanine will see that you want to talk to us. She'll introduce you by your area code, and we'll have a conversation. So, Miss Jeanine, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet.
Well, I can only imagine that that conversation would leave some question in somebody's mind. And so if you're out there in listener land, push 1 and let's have a conversation about it. What's on your mind? How can we support you? Anything going on in your world? Anything that you need the or would like to have support in understanding the tools, utilizing the tools, whether it be the forgiveness process or any of the other dozens of tools that we share? If so, push 1. Let's have a conversation about it. 563-999-3581. If you're on one of those stations that we're broadcast through that doesn't come directly into our control panel, so we can't tell you're there. But if you call that number, push 1. We'll be talking. So
and
let's talk about it.
We have a hand up.
Sweet. Let's go for it.
Okay. I think that it is Patrick McGaitland. Area code 727. You're on the air.
Okay. Am I muted or can you hear me?
You're loud and clear, Patrick. Welcome. Good to hear your voice. Haven't heard from you in a while
right
on the show.
Okay. I have about a small dissertation on my thoughts. And first, I'll start off with I hated war, and I hated killing, and I hated all that stuff, and I wanted to save people. But then, and then I found when I did the Beamer, which activated the energy to move and the blood to move through my legs, which weren't working anymore for lack of blood flow and neuropathy, then one night, all this energy comes up from my legs, my voice torched it around, and I realized, oh my gosh, what I blocked there was I hate war, and I don't like really being here on Earth because of that, because of people from high school beating up other kids and people picking on people and all that stuff. I just hated it. And I said, well, okay.
Right.
So now I understand that that judgment, judged not least to be judged, is not good. So I thought maybe I'm supposed to look at this from a higher perspective, from maybe, soul perspective of growth of people over lifetimes. And I said, well, I was probably, pretty heavy duty guy in some lives and was a warrior, but I quit and switched, and Patrick switched, and many people I know who were warriors and even killers, I thought they were really good at it, switched over and became healers. We've had enough of that crap, right? So then, so I looked at it from more of that level, more often to, balance myself out on my viewpoints of judging it all. But I still, when I went in the Latter-day Saints Church and I was, just loving love, my favorite thing, I love love and hate hate. Well, the hate didn't work out too well for me. So also just popped into my head coming from off to the side. Now go back on track, I believe, is Allah. And Allah, when I was in a meditation group that was chanting Allah, they were Sufis. And everybody holds hands and just be in love with Allah. And at the end of it, and all kinds of wonderful things happen. people clear, people cry, people go to joy, people, it's really nice. And so I asked the leader at the end, I said, what does Allah mean? He said, all there is. So along the way, I thought, well, I'm supposed to love all there is. I'm not, you know, be in neutral type love. Don't judge it. You know, it's all development of souls. We're all made in the image of God. We're all creators. We're all learning how to be creators. And the majority on earth are learning the hard way through pain, suffering, you know, death, and destruction. Well, then in their thing, it was a thing that really bothered me, and going back to Latter-day Saints teachings and church, you know, interpretations, they had one guy who was assigned by an angel to kill a leader of the bad guys. And I thought, what, do you got to be kidding me? So I addressed this with the brothers, and they said, well, you know, like that was his mission. That's what he was supposed to do, and that would save a lot of people. And also, how do you all feel about war? Because you're willing to go, unlike other religions you're willing to do. And they said, well, if there hadn't been, you know, war, and this country hadn't come about through war, we wouldn't have a place to be, you know, freedom of religion and Latter-day Saints and all the other people that are free to have a free country. I'm like, well, I wonder, I don't really like this, but I hold some truth from a higher perspective, not mine. Then I go, okay, now it comes Ukraine and Russia. So then my own personality's perspective on that I go on higher is, this is, for me and my wife both, a war between light and dark. Why? Because all autocratic countries, all countries like Russia, North Korea, et cetera, communism is fine for me. It means working together. But dictatorships and autocratic leadership where they program all the people, and I know we're programmed, but their program, like the North Koreans, they believe when they came south to our lines that they were going to rescue all these, you know, their people from us raping and pillaging. That's how they were programmed. And it wasn't true. One guy out of 36 who went to kill the president down south, his grenade, he was going to commit suicide. They all do that. And they did that, every one of them, by blowing up their own heads because they were so programmed, even though they saw the beauty of soul and that nothing that they were programmed was true at all. There was no, everybody was happy. So why are we down here? Why are we doing this? Nobody could question it. Everybody went ahead and tried it and then destroyed themselves, except for one guy's lousy grenade didn't go off, and he became a South Korean, and told the story of that, and how he was programmed, and how beautiful it was, and, you know, but he just had to go ahead with it. And then we ourselves, by our country, were programmed in high school to be anti-communist, and we'd go fight and kill commies over in Vietnam, and quite a few people I knew, that's what they believed they were there to do. Let's go kill some commies. So I feel this programming, even by so-called free country like ours, who behind the scenes is doing terrible things. And I see two things in this war, Russia and Ukraine. I see that the whole, basically, over 22 countries in the free world of supposed free will and choice, which I consider the light and say the angels of darkness, I think that dictatorships, even in our country, whatever it is, but it's paramount in countries that are dictatorships, that everybody who's trying to control others is one of the fallen angel type energies that they're being guided by and that they're in. And those who choose free will and believe in freedom are on the side of, you know, what I call the light. That's the perspective I'm still holding. And then I got to thinking, you know, I believe everything you say. At the same time, it's like I have a dual mind about it. I'm going, okay, we're watching this war. We go back and forth on it, watch what happens, and watch the, to me, it's like Russia, what they were doing there, they're starving countries all over the world because of their blockades and because of their theft. And they were planning on blocking the whole southern area, shrinking Ukraine, blocking the Black Sea so they had no import-export. They're the think, the second or first major exporter of grain to all the four countries in the world. So there's going to be a lot of starvation because of Russia and their control. All of their people that weren't programmed, the majority of their soldiers were programmed to begin with, but not enough. And now they know, hey, we're being lied to. Now the ones that were trained a long time still fight. You know, they're supposed to, like the North Korean guys coming through. But then it's like, so for me, it's a war between light and dark. And I'm seeing now, from my perspective at this point, that what the Latter-day Saints were saying might be, you know, might have some truth, and that millions are going to die. I would know that, you know, people are controlled in Russia and North Korea and et cetera, other countries. They don't even allow, some countries are dictatorship. One of them, they allowed computers in because it means freedom. People begin to think, open up and see the world, you know, and want that freedom. But without this being a win, without stopping Russia and all the suffering and all the hell that's happening and all the long-term suffering that all the Russian people, not a great people. And I found that staying with Japanese, they were programmed, we were programmed, they were supposed to fight for their God and take over. And all these insane things that happened, it's just total insanity. And we know that. But it's like,
through the war,
we stopped Germany and we stopped Japan from controlling the world and subjugating people under dominance, which I really think is, you know, like if Earth is going to, we let it grow, if it's let to grow, then we're all screwed. We're all going under dominance, which may happen with countries anyway, like CIA, et cetera. So anyway, those are all my thoughts on that. So I'm listening on what you think about all that.
Yeah, my take, you know, one of the things that has to happen, there's an interesting statement that was made by Vladimir Lenin. He says that if you want to destroy a culture, all you need to do is change the meaning of its words. And you brought up a word that this whole mindset of war is based on, in the word warrior. And it was about maybe 2 hours before the show that I just happened to come across a definition from a Native American that we're all familiar with, a man named Sitting Bull. Sitting Bull, interestingly enough, was a Lakota Sioux. The Lakota Sioux language is Aramaic. There are many words in the Lakota Sioux language here in America that are identical to the Aramaic language of Yeshua from 2,000 years ago. But I just happened to come across a statement made by Sitting Bull, Aramaic in mindset, and he defines the word warrior for us. You know, we think of warrior as, you know, out there with the guns and kill and all of that. But the Native American Lakota Sioux, which to me would fit in with the Aramaic, he says the warrior for us is one who sacrifices himself for the good of others. His task is to take care of the elderly, the defenseless, those who cannot provide for themselves. Above all, the children, the future of humanity. They're the words of Sitting Bull about warrior.
Yay.
And I think that when one is cast in that role, but the persona, and it fits. I don't know if you've seen this. Patrick, you will love this movie if you haven't seen it. Spider-Man No Way Home was like one of the biggest hits in the movie world last year in 2021. You know, watch it on Amazon. I think it costs us $5 to rent it or whatever. I don't know where else you might be able to see it. But you'll love watching the resolution of, I mean, you watch this kid, this Spider-Man kid who, you know, his father was killed by one of the arch villains, and he just goes nuts in rage and wants to kill. And, you know, his alternate personalities carrying the message of that is not who we are, we do it differently, provides resolution. And it's time for us to, I think, come forward as individuals and collectively to provide resolution for those who would carry out the ill intentions that you're talking about, that the in our Western degraded definition of warrior means we're going to go kill somebody, that it's time for us to get back to the truth of what it really is about. It's about being a caretaker. It's about being one who cares, who brings love present and brings healing. And, you know, it's the one of the reasons for me being dedicated to this forgiveness technology is that it's the single piece of information that is missing globally to me. It's the single piece of information that is missing globally that leaves us with no way to see through to resolution. Handed this tool, people can start to see through to the resolution of such deep pain. I mean, in this film, this Disney film on Spider-Man No Way Home, I mean, they show this kid, you know, you'll remember that Spider-Man is a kid who's bitten by a spider and he becomes a superhero, you know, the whole comic book thing. But, you know, coming right down to, you know, his father or maybe it was his grandfather who's killed. And, I mean, they just show this kid just raging in murderous rage, wanting to kill, and the resolution and the healing and reminded that this rage, this murderous thing is not who we are. It's not what we do. And there is resolution outside of that, but in the world of rage, there is no other resolution possible. And this, to me, this piece called forgiveness is the single missing piece, and I spelled that P-E-A-C-E, of the puzzle that brings, literally brings the ultimate pain that so many people are carrying, and through a mind filled with that kind of pain can't imagine anything other than, you know, the rageful killing and justifying it by, yeah, but we're going to save millions. Well, what if we brought healing to those who are, quote unquote, in the realm of the bad guy? What if we brought that presence of love, which is what this film demonstrates so powerfully, and we're able to move through to the other side of the greed, of the pain, of the trauma? And when we can get enough people, for me, the reason I'm dedicated to this is when we can get enough people to understand that principle, then we can transform the whole game, the whole insanity, and get back to the truth of who we are here on planet Earth and start to function out of who we are.
I have, you can hear me still, right?
Oh, yeah, you're loud and clear, Patrick.
Hello?
Sure.
Okay. So there were two more things. One is Patricia's overview point of evolution of all of us and my viewpoint of us here in America and your forefront, Jesus or Yeshua's forefront and your forefront at the front of the wedge to bring peace and healing. So one of the things that these are good things I found from the war over there in Ukraine. A lot of people were and are being raped and pillaged and killed for no reason, and a lot of trauma going on. But during Vietnam, what stopped the war was basically reporting, pictures, films. Now it's at a higher level than ever. So because of the internet, because the information gets out there, now the United States, as you know, did the same thing. We did all the trauma. We're still doing it down in Gitmo. Torture every country, kill all the people, destroy the water, let the children die because there's no water, blah, blah, blah. And we look like the good guy, but we've never been any more than the Russians, in truth. But now, because of this reporting and because they're being charged with the war crimes, then that's going to stop us, and it's going to stop other countries. And it's all because of this information availability. So I can see the good coming from that. And I see that here in the United States, where people have been, you know, like one of the people I'm thinking of right now, you know, another trauma from childhood extreme and now repeating those problems over and over now in her life, that we can help those people directly in the here and now. I don't think there's any way we could have got to Putin or any of his bad guys in that whole system Additionally, my wife and I watched a CIA type that was, I forgot what it was called, but anyway, they understand. He explained that the Russian people for so many generations were under a czar, that their race consciousness still wanted one person in charge. They didn't want a democratic society. And
yes,
the majority, all the old people, like, you know, 50 and up, don't want a democratic society. They just want one
like
guy
to be told what to do
and leave. Yeah, they actually want it.
Yep.
But because of the internet, the younger generation is wanting more freedom. They're still, a lot of them are being careful on interviews, of course, because they can go to jail for 15 years.
Right.
It's a war. But I can see that it's changing, but it's changing fairly quickly compared to any other time in our history. But also,
yes,
the way Bishop put it is, it's like we're all one unit. We're all one. And the real change is the evolution of all of us. Sometimes, you know, lifetime after lifetime, kind of slowly when you look at that perspective. But I do see, even when I go to churches, no matter what they are, 30, 40 years ago, the majority of any church I went to, there were only a few that were in the light for real. And the majority were what I call hypocrites, friends of mine I saw from high school. They say and mimic and try to look right and act, you know, try to hide behind a tie and a suit, but go out and do evil in their business all week long and then come back to church trying to, you know, get led in the right path, but it wasn't in them. But now I see the light seems to be coming through more and more and more. More and more are waking up everywhere I look. Maybe that's, you know, resonance for me, but I really feel that it's happening. But I feel like a place like, even though like the South Koreans are trying to help out the North Koreans all the time because it's a dictatorship for generations, they and Russia are going to have to go through long-term suffering, you know, get a lot of bankrupt Russia. It's going to be a real mess for a long time after this is over. Right, it is already.
And I'd hold a space for something different than that.
Yeah, I'd like that. Right,
there's definitely a lot of trauma to be cleaned up in the world. And each person, to me, you know, if I thought that we had to get the technology of forgiveness to every pained, traumatized, insane, murderous mind, I'd have given this up a long time ago. But there was this physicist 2,000 years ago who said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. And that's a principle of critical mass in physics, that we don't have to get to every mind. We just have to get enough minds through the gate that collectively we can produce an energy that brings that transformation. And that transformation, when the active presence of love is powerful enough, can happen in an instant and change the most ancient traumas and pains literally in an instant. We did, you know, in our Hear My Voice book study out of England, our last session that we did with the group, the woman who runs the group actually shared a worksheet that she'd done that morning, and it was kind of an offhanded worksheet she shared. She said it wasn't, you know, some big issue in her life or anything, but she was committed to doing worksheets, and so she had done a worksheet the morning of the book study. And, you know, the book study is 3:30 in the afternoon here on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month at 3:30 in the afternoon Eastern time, which means it's 8:30 at night there. And this young woman was still in tears from the worksheet she'd done that morning because it was an offhanded worksheet, nothing of any big consequence. But the insight that she had when she canceled the goal and allowed her mind to be freed of the momentary trauma that was going on was such a profoundly powerful insight for her that very early in her life, and she realized that she'd been living with this under everything her whole life with no awareness of it whatsoever, was that she didn't deserve to be here. You know, as a young child, she acquired the thought, you know, and it was probably a power person message. We didn't get into that specifically, but she had been laboring her whole life. This woman in her early 40s labored her whole life with an unconscious thought of, I don't deserve to be here. And the pain and the trauma of that, that keeps coming back around, the why is this happening to me again experience. And it's so powerful to hear her still, you know, on the verge of tears, processing that. And when we can get enough people who will step in and process those kinds of energies personally within themselves, then we're opening a field on the planet for all traumas that people carry to be processed in an instant. And so that's the space I hold for the shift that's coming, because we're seeing so many signs. To me, you know, the fact that we watch this film and here's in this major, like the biggest movie of the year for Disney, this major healing process. To me, that's like, hey, we're on the cusp of critical mass and we're right on the edge of moving it forward. That's my vote. And being able to embrace literally the trauma of the generations. I had a...
This way, I don't know how long it'll take, and I don't know when it'll pop. But I do know this: we can work, you know, work, do the leavening. So I'm looking forward to reintroducing your work to the church on Sunday or Saturday, excuse me.
Cool. Sweet. Yeah. Awesome. I don't know if I shared this with you, Patrick. I don't think we had a conversation about it, but back several months ago, I was doing a still point session. Jeannie had gone off to see her dad at the care facility, and I was here, and I was doing a still point session. And in breathing, I had experienced an opening, and in that opening, my eyes are closed while I'm doing still point, and I literally am guided to look down, even though, you know, I'm just laying there breathing. I'm guided to look down, and as I move my eyes down inside of me, my eyes aren't open, but inside of me, it opens, and I see this unfathomably large field of darkness. And in the darkness were an uncountable number of lights. And what I was told was happening in that space was that I was looking at my generational patterns, my generational traumas, and the uncountable number of people in my genes who, while they were these sparks of light, were lost in darkness, that this darkness was just the expanse, it was just beyond my imagination. And in that space, there was a request from those people who were in my history, in my genes, to support them in processing the pain that they were carrying that was still being held by them, even though they weren't in bodies. And I, you know, very willingly said, yes, of course, I'll be happy to be the conduit to process this pain out of your experiences. And it was interesting because literally, and we're down to the last minute or so, but literally I verbally, in my still point session, I verbally spoke to my ancestors about, yes, I'm willing to be the conduit to process that pain. And at the moment when I said that, my phone rang. And Michael J., my son, was on the phone. And we've never had any conversation about ancestral stuff or any of that. And literally the second that I said to my ancestors, yes, I will help to process that pain, my phone rings and there's Michael J. And he's, Dad, I'm on Ancestry.com and I'm looking up some ancestry stuff and I need some information about some of our ancestors. Conversation we've never had. And to this second when I say that, there he is. It was just like, to me, it was a symbol. And then Jeannie came back. And when she arrived at home after seeing her dad, she was in tears. And it's like, geez, honey, what's happening? And the energy for her, the healing that was happening in her was her father, and I'm just going to let the phone, the clock run out. Her father had spoken words to her that it's been a long time in his trauma that he said, and he spoke to her when, you know, normally she'll say, bye, Dad, we'll see you later, I love you. And her dad spoke the words, I love you, back, and just touched a place in her heart of deep healing. And she walked in the room, and that opened a whole other level of healing for me with my father and the traumas that we carried. So, you know, it's happening, and the more people who choose to participate, the deeper the healing process is going to be on a global scale. And we're here all the space for that. And appreciate you being part of the team and the opportunity to be on your team as well.